I do not think.
So what are you getting at?
Do you even listen to yourself when you talk?
Hey, we're live! Woohoo!
Turn off your radio before it's too late!
Hated it.
I told you this was a bad idea.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Why does this make you feel better?
Oh, because I enjoy the pain of others. The sports schadenfreude aspect. It's what keeps me bringing me back, Mike. And Isaiah Thomas, while I was wrong on him too, all right, yeah, I got called out on that. I got whipped up in the green ooze like everybody else a couple of years ago. I knew, like Jimmy Stewart behind me, and anyone with a brain, you could tell that there was a ceiling with this thing. Y'all overrated this guy and this team. It's why I mocked them as the Bridgies. And you know what? It doesn't matter what I think. It mattered what Danny Ainge thought. And he blew it up because he knew they got the max out of this guy. And you still want to talk about him like he's as good as Kyrie Irving. And he's not. And he went there, and it was toxic from the get-go in Cleveland. And he's mouthing off, undermining the coach, undermining the best player on the planet. And they shipped his ass out after he played 15 games. I'm going to crow. And enjoy getting bought out in L.A. too. Oh, maybe he can be back in Boston. No, he's not coming back here. And over my dead body, but I want him here. He'd be toxic here too.
Those are Elite Isaiah Thomas thoughts. We'll cycle through these calls and we'll mix into the Patriots and our developing opinions on that next segment as well. Now, you got a lead off thought before I go back to the phones?
God, no.
Nate in New Bedford. Hi, Nate.
Yeah, what's up? So I'm about to spew a lot of Celtics positivity right now, and I don't want to be confused as one of these Celtics green teamers, because mainly I'm a Bruins and Pats fan. But Danny Ainge can't be disregarded in this whole thing as how great he is at picking coaches, because Danny Ainge started with the Celtics in 03. He brought in Doc Rivers in 04 as his first major move, and we know how great that worked out with KG, Ray Allen, Rondo, Pierce, obviously. But how great of a coach is Brad Stevens? We know more than any other league the NBA is filled with prima donna type players, and the players run the teams, as you can see in Cleveland with LeBron, that mess right now. IT was a shell of himself in Cleveland. Jay Crowder was literally a shadow on the court. If you want to go even further than the Cavs, the Pistons traded Avery Bradley because he was complete garbage this year, and now he's on a Clippers team that has no clue where they're heading. Brad Stevens is one of the greatest coaches in the league right now because he knows how to deal with all these personalities.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you there. We just mentioned this. It is staggering what has become of these pieces that were here and how they're just into. I mean, Bradley's still a good, valuable player, right?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, but, no question.
But again, you get Marcus Morris out of him, and the Pistons don't even want him. They deal him. Now, he's part of Blake Griffin. He was part of the Griffin trade, right? So, yeah. I mean, they got a hell of a return on that. And just still, the point being that
I think you can make the case that Brad Stevens has the Midas touch of being able to take bums and turn them into heroes.
And Danny Ainge has the ability to not take the cheese on regular season performances or, you know, just sort of bridge-level talent, and he doesn't fall in love, and he'll ship your ass out of here, and thank God Danny Ainge has that attitude.
Look, I mean, in the case of Detroit, though, you know, they weren't going to sign Bradley to a big contract, and like you said, they got a superstar back. So, you know, to me, that isn't an indictment on Bradley's play, that trade. But to me, the biggest thing is what the caller said. In that league, how many college coaches come in with massive egos and think that they're going to tell the players what to do? And Stevens doesn't approach it that way. I think, to me, his skill aside, because the X's and O's to me are one thing, but his skill is being able to get those guys to buy in and not put himself first.
Sean in Maine, hi.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Not much, Sean. What do you got?
I don't like all the hating on Marcus Smart. I mean, if you look at his efficiency rating on D, he's top five in the league. We've been taking the Warriors to town recently. I honestly think if they're scared of anybody in the playoffs, it's us. And that's for good reason. And I think Marcus Smart is a huge deal with that. And after what the Cavs did today, when I'm cleaning house, and we're staying the same, I mean, we're the beast in the East right now. And I think Marcus Smart is a huge thing with
he
that.
He is. Why do you scoff at that, Mass?
Oh, yeah, no. The Warriors are terrified. They're terrified.
We're not talking about that. That's what he said. I just heard the beast in the East.
Oh, no. He said, the Warriors are, we're giving the Warriors everything they can handle, and Marcus Smart is why. Oh, they're terrified. The Warriors are terrified.
Well, he never said terrified.
He implied it.
Well, you're sort of putting words in his mouth.
No, that's what we do.
Okay. So he never, that's why I didn't hear that, because he didn't say it. And by the way, you know, I'm with you. It's not like I'm keeping Marcus Smart, you know, at the expense of Anthony Davis or, sure, you know, one of those things. But as explained to me, the flexibility of having Marcus Smart to either match the money or use it as an expiring contract is valuable. So it's the best of both worlds. You get to use him for your run this year and go on a run. You're not going to win it all, but go as far as you can go. I hate to break it to you. Last spring was pretty good, too. And yeah, you got walloped at the end, but so what? You know, you made another step as an organization. Do the same thing this year. Marcus Smart helps you do it. And then if you can use him to get something better in the offseason, great.
Okay, so again, but that is provided that what you get now is worse than what you could get in the offseason. If what you can get now is better, move him. Move him.
Okay.
That's all.
Depends what we're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about a little bit better draft pick, I'm still keeping him.
So I would take a mid-first rounder. I would. To me, that's sort of where the line is. You get into the 20s, I'm out. No.
I would not.
But you give me 15 or above, I'm in.
For me, it's like 6 or above. He was drafted 6 overall, right? Like, it would have to be that. And you're not getting that. I mean, that's stupid to even talk about. Sandra in North Andover. Hi, Sandra.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
I think they were very, no pun intended, I think you're right, Felger. I think Danny Ainge was very smart in not trading Smart. And I'm not a green teamer. Well, sometimes I can be. But with Brad Lee and a couple of other ones on there, I said, you know what, overrated, trade them, go, they got to go. Isaiah, I was sad about, but I realized it was a good trade for Irving. But I have to say, Smart is too good defensively. I'm not being a green teamer, even though I can be that way sometimes. I definitely think Smart helps the team so much.
Yeah, if you watch the games. And not that I watch, you know, I'm one of these NBA people that usually watch the end, you know, but that's when I see him. I mean, if you watch the end of these games and it's winning time, he wins you games.
Yeah, competitive guy. Again, I'm not, but you
but he makes difference making plays at
he
the
does.
End of these games.
And I think you can find guys like that.
Yeah, I know it's you think you could, but maybe in that league you can't. Maybe the hustle guy in that NBA. You know, a hustler guy like that is more rare than we realize.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's about the defense and the effort and maybe some of the little things. But James Posey made plays like that.
Do we have something?
Yeah, something.
This is breaking sports news.
Powered by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Now, you wanted it for anything, right?
Yep. Hit the button first and ask questions later.
All right, so this is from Hoops Hype, who say the Celtics were talking to the Memphis Grizzlies about a possible Tyreke Evans deal minutes before the deadline. It doesn't appear they completed the trade, but during the talks, the Celtics, I'm told, this is from Alex Kennedy, Hoops Hype, offered 2 second-round picks and Gershon Yabusele for Tyreke Evans, but it doesn't appear that they have agreed to terms before this deadline. I would have made that deal. I don't know if it's clearly not enough for
okay.
Memphis. But
is it Memphis? I mean, you would have. Obviously, Memphis wouldn't have. Jimmy?
That is an incorrect trade rumor.
Oh. Well, what do you got back there,
so then,
Scoops McGee?
So then we really shouldn't have hit the sounder. I disagree. We should always hit the sounder. Discuss what was the offer? It was just non-existent.
Yabusele was not offered in any trade today, according to my people.
He is untouchable?
I didn't say that.
the untouchable bear.
I'd have made that deal in a second.
It wasn't offered.
I mean, again, you know, to me, anybody, you know, that's a second round picks. My God, please, you can wipe your bottom with those. As far as I'm concerned,
that's what I feel about number 15.
See, I don't feel that way about 15. I don't. I mean, you know, you get some decent players in the middle of the first round.
I know. The Greek Freak came within that range as well. I mean, I know. There's always one or two, but on balance, I don't know.
An Olynyk?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we're going to start to mix in some developing Patriots opinions throughout the course of the day as well. I mean, I think Isaiah Thomas being traded, again, a pretty big news item, and we'll keep that on the board all day long, but we have some developing thoughts on the Patriots and the loss and the events of this week, and so we'll start getting into that.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
No one says it like they do. Like they do.
So my question to the people of Boston is, what are you nuts?
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Is your intention definitely to be back with the Patriots next season?
Absolutely.
Thanks. Yeah, hello. This is Bill Belichick.
Hi, Coach. This is Byron Barnett from 7 News in Boston. Sorry about the loss last night. So you say that you will be back coaching next year. Is that what you said?
I said I've addressed that question.
Would you mind repeating it just so we have it straight?
Look, I don't have to answer the same question every day. It's ridiculous.
Well, for those of us who may not have heard, would you mind?
Next question.
Maz, you get the sense the spin control is out or anything?
I do. I totally get the look. There were a bunch of things I read today. And when I say spin control, I'm talking on the part of the organization. Okay, they want stuff out there. Is my point. So if any of the writers involved with these, don't take it personally. I was there, you know, and I did the same thing. But like in reading the Mike Reese thing this morning, that, you know, this could extend Belichick's career, not shorten it.
This being the retention of Josh McDaniels.
Correct. I couldn't help but feel that's the organization trying to deflect any speculation that Bill's done, because they know that's a huge distraction going into a football season. So what are you going to do, show up for 2018 and say this is Belichick's last year and he's got to fend that off all year long? That'll chew it up the way the Cleveland thing did when he was in his final year there in Cleveland.
You can never have a lame duck year, right?
No, never. Not in a million years. So that's the last thing they want. So I think the organization wants it out there as, no, you guys are looking at it wrong. This isn't going to shorten Bill's career. This is going to lengthen it. Right? It's like, to me, it's the total opposite. And so I went, I don't buy it. And again, now I'm coming back to the other, the stuff earlier in the week. Greg Bedard on our show on Tuesday. And then again, Ben Volen in the Globe earlier this week. And I just want to read you the exact line. Okay, Ben Volen wrote in the Globe upon McDaniels coming back. McDaniels is the guy the franchise needs to find and develop the next quarterback. He did it once with Garoppolo. The Patriots know they need him to do it again. No mention there of Belichick at all. He did it. McDaniels did it. Josh McDaniels picked Garoppolo and developed him. I mean, do you believe that?
No.
Singularly.
No, I mean, I'm on the outside, but if you're going to ask me, I credit Belichick.
So now you want to
tell
me.
Because I blame Belichick when someone doesn't develop. I credit him when someone does develop.
Now you want to tell me that Josh McDaniels had some hand in it because Bill drafted him, ultimately had final say. They drafted him. Josh worked with him. They did the things that Bill likes to do, and Josh played a part. Sure. Absolutely. But he did it once with Garoppolo, and they need him to do it again? That's like, don't worry about the quarterback. Bill had nothing to do with it anyway. Like, I hear that and read that, and then I hear, oh, no, he's going to be here longer. And I just say, I feel like I'm being sold something now.
So I tied into the Reese report, and again, this is not a commentary on Mike Reese. But I think a lot of his reporting typically represents the organization's thoughts. I mean, I'll just say that. And again, that's not a dig. It's just we. I'm glad we have that insight from Mike, but I think that's where the insight comes from. He said this thing that what really kept Josh back was Bill coming to him. And I sort of bought this initially, too. But now that I think about it, I think I'm being sold something. That McDaniels was brought back because Bill said, all right, Josh, I'm now going to let you into the inner sanctum. I'm now going to share with you all the secrets. I'm going to show you how I did. Very much like Parcells did with me. And that I bent over and kissed his ass over in that 30 for 30 thing. Right? Like, thank you, Bill, for showing me things that you didn't have to show me. And now I'm going to do the same for Josh. And that's why Josh came back. And I now that I think of that, it's like,
what else is there to know?
What?
You've been around him long enough.
Boy, that feels like a fairy tale. Like, now I'm going to let you in, Josh. I'm going to let you in and show you the secrets. Where, like, I'm sorry, Bill's not the only one who can figure out the salary cap. It's not that hard. And Josh has been here on and off for 18 years?
Something like that. 15 anyway.
15, 16, 17 years. Something along those lines. You don't think he's picked up how they treat players, how they treat contracts, how they handle the salary cap, how Bill handles his roster? Like, you've got to be kidding me.
And the other thing is, and someone that said this to me,
Belichick clearly taught him how to tape a walkthrough because Josh went to Denver and damn did the same thing. So he didn't need to learn that.
No, they nailed that one. Yeah, no, he got that one down.
You don't think Josh picked up any of the secrets? He goes somewhere else and immediately gets caught taping. And you know who was doing the taping was Steve Scarnecchia, Dante's kid. Like, you don't think these guys all are on the same page anyway?
Totally.
Give me a break.
And as someone said to me today, and I didn't even think of it in these simpler terms, but there's a truth in this too. He's already been a head coach. He's already run his own operation. Like, even if it was for a year and a half. So there were things he did there that he learned that he was applying that Belichick taught him in the first place. And then secondly, that he learned on the fly as it was. He doesn't need Belichick to open something up to him 18 years later.
And he already got that. Everything you read about his time in Denver is that he instilled this culture of secrecy and paranoia. Who the hell do you think he got that from? You know what I mean? Come on. Like, this is a little silly to me. You know, like, oh, let me teach you the inner workings of pettiness and how to bench a player when you shouldn't. Oh, okay. All right. Let me sit down. I mean, he's been around him enough. He knows all the little secrets. I thought this was kind of silly.
I know. You add it all up, And it just, the whole thing feels like, no, let's not dwell on the fact that Bill might be gone after next year. Let's not dwell on that. It's just, it's, you know, an attempt to justify a different point of view so that we don't focus on what is the most likely scenario, and that is that there is now a transition going on.
Okay, so there's two things. There's a PR element to it, but then again, it's also smart for the locker room. I mean, so, like, and part of me is not blaming them for this. The PR stuff, I don't care, you know, like, I don't know why they're so obsessed with the PR of it, but they are. That's their deal. But in terms of the practicality of the locker room, not letting it be known that it's a lame duck year for Bill or a walk year for Bill, I think there's an important football tangible reason to do that.
Sure.
Right? You know, because even someone like Bill, if you know the guys out the door, you know, some guys show up to work differently. And so I think that's important that they don't let it out that this could be his last year or is his last year. And so they're getting out ahead of that and with some spin, and I think that's okay.
So listen, go ahead, Mark. It's a good point.
Yeah, that part's smart, because if people look at it as a sinking ship, you're definitely going to have some players that will just be checked out.
I mean, you know, I hate to, there's never a perfect analogy, okay? But when the Bruins put Cassidy on the bench next to Julian, how was it perceived by people like us?
Well, that's the guy right over his shoulder.
And what happened?
Well, that's what happened.
Julian got fired and Cassidy took over. Okay, so now again, you can say all you want about, well, no, they brought him up because of this, because of that, because of... Fine. At the end of the day, it happened the way we thought it was going to happen. Okay, they put the successor in place so that they could have an easier transition when they made the move. And I think that in a very loose way, and again, no analogy is perfect, I think that that's what's going on here. I think that they have the successor lined up, the transition will take place more smoothly this way, and when Bill walks, that's it. Everyone knows Josh is the guy, the relationships are forged, and you don't hit any speed bumps along the way, or you hit fewer ones anyway. To me, that's what this is.
I'm still wondering if, you know, I mean, again, I don't think it's likely. I think Bill's back, but... Until he says it, and again, he hasn't answered it in the last little bit, that's why we played you the sound, until he's back, you know, I still think there's a 2%, 5% chance there that, you know, it's sooner rather than later to Josh. I mean, sooner. And so, I mean, we'll see, you know, until there's something more definitive coming out on that, I think there's a little bit of holding your breath there on Belichick, which remains a story, and that opens up a whole other big thing of, you know, was Bill willing to give you 3-4 more years? And now it's down to 1 because of everything that happened this year. That's not a good story. You know, that's not a good story. You've shortened your window with Belichick, who, despite him bollocksing up this Super Bowl, is still the greatest of all time and gives you the best chance to win and all of that. Secondarily, the other thing, you know, and I got this a little bit listening to the midday, because I feel for some of those guys, like, you know, Zoe, who bleeds Patriot, and Louthy, their producer, who's a big Patriots fan. I think the Patriots fans are having a hard time coming to grips with the fact that Bill made a bad call, and maybe for the wrong reasons, with Butler, because the pretzel logic and the trying of the latest. So what the midday show is wondering today is something had to have happened with Butler. They can't accept the fact that it was just a football decision or a personal decision, that Bill was trying to bury the player for personal reasons, that he had to have done something. And now they're arriving at that maybe they did it because when Butler pushed the coach, he pushed it after the inactives were announced, 90 minutes before the game, and so you had to stick with that inactive list. And that's because, again, the most egregious part of the whole thing, as I said from the very first second, is that Butler was in uniform. That's the worst part of it, that he was in uniform and on the punt team, but he wasn't good enough to play on defense. Like, that's the worst part of the whole thing. And everyone knows it. And so the ones that can't accept it, like poor Zoe, now are thinking that maybe Butler pushed the coach after the inactive list was announced 90 minutes before the game, and now you can't take the uniform away because you've already put in your inactives, and that explains what happened, that it was something off the field, and it came so late, in fact, it came late after the roster was submitted, that you can't change the roster. That explains it.
Then why was he on the punt coverage for the one play?
Maz?
Why did Tom Brady co-sign on the Instagram post?
I'm just telling you that I don't believe them. But I think that, again, they care so much about the team. I'm not ragging on them. I'm just telling you that they care so much about the team, and they don't want to accept it was just a bad call for the wrong reason, that I think we keep coming up with these scenarios. We keep coming up with
these... He's not infallible. It's okay to say he screwed this up.
But, you know, even part of me is like, he can't have been this brazenly wrong. He can't have let the personality thing get into it that badly. There has to be a reason, right? Like,
precedent set with Wes Welker. You keep talking about that and how he used him in 2010 in that Jets game because of the foot jokes. This, you know he can be this petty.
He can. I mean, I think there's examples of it all over us, even today. What's the other headline today in the NFL?
Garoppolo.
Garoppolo got his money. Bill really liked Garoppolo. Really liked him. So he took care of him. Sent him to a place he thought he would have success and set him up. Guys he doesn't like, Wes Welker, Malcolm Butler.
Jamie Collins.
Etc. He buries. Because at the end of the day, he's a human being, and he does make some decisions based on whether you're his guy or not his guy, or whether he likes you or doesn't like you. Like most of us. That's because he is not a cyborg. He is a human being. And so humans are prone to make the wrong decision for wrong reasons from time to time. And Bill did it. And we have a hard time accepting it because it was that bad.
I'll tell you, in the case of Welker, I give Welker credit because ultimately he ended up okay. You know, he played it in such a way that he got to choose where he played. He ultimately chose Denver. He lost money.
And so will Malcolm Butler at the end of the day.
Right. And so maybe those guys actually had some, but the other ones, Seymour, Mankins, those guys got buried. They did. They got traded to places that suck. Jamie Collins.
Felger and Maz. This is Felger.
The man is beholden to no one.
And Maz.
I don't really know what to expect.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Hey, did any of you guys kind of chuckle or laugh when Brady dropped that touchdown pass? And did you immediately think back to Tom versus Time when Edelman challenged him to get out there and run the routes and says, that's not my effing job?
There's some irony there, Robert. There's some irony. I think the whole thing was tempting the fates a little bit. He made it through healthy. You know, that's the one you're tempting karma. So I'm beating time. That's when you break your leg. But even just, you know, bad look releasing that thing before the game.
Doesn't make you faster, apparently.
Maybe he doesn't have all the answers. Although he was great in the game. You know, it's not like he did anything wrong. But still.
The play was stupid. I blame McDaniels. Don't get cute. I don't even care if he completed it.
Catch
so
the ball.
So stupid.
Namaste. Focus. Catch the ball.
Can we stop calling it a touchdown pass? Like all of a sudden Brady's going to blaze down the sideline and beat everyone to the end zone?
It's 20 yards at least.
I say 15. But either way, fine. I'll split the difference with you. 17.5 and then he runs out of bounds or he gets killed.
Nothing wrong with the play call. It was there. That was a can of corn. Both those guys. What's Amendola doing trying to lead him? Like he's freaking, you know, Darren Sproles out of the backfield. And catch the ball, Brady. Dan and Quincy, what do you got today?
You know, I woke up Monday with sports depression. I watched my retirement account go out with the stock market, and then I had to watch the news. He's covered that stupid truck with Wally the Green Giant on top of it. I almost wanted to jump out the window and call it quits right then and there. The truck did it for me. It put me over the edge, and I've been reeling ever since. So, but on the leverage thing and the power thing, Tony, you sound happy about this is all the strife is coming to Belichick's life. But you really think Belichick doesn't have any leverage at all?
I didn't say he had none. I mean, he's a great coach, Danny, but he has less leverage than he's had in a long time.
Okay, but here's my thought. I mean, he's near retirement. His legacy is etched in stone. He's got all the money in the world, and there are 31 other teams that would break the door down to hire him. That's leverage. And do you think Kraft would feel better or worse if Belichick told him to go take the job and shove it?
So wait a minute. He can't go those other teams, Danny. He's got 2 years left on his contract,
at least. That. He could. Well, he'd take a couple of years off, take a deep breath, and then he could always get a job. Okay, let that one go. Do you think Kraft would feel better or worse if Belichick told him to go screw right now?
I think Kraft would feel relieved on some level.
You would. You do.
Relieved. So I didn't say happy. I didn't say he'd accept it. But I say on some percentage of him would say, okay, well, there's nothing I can do. He wants to walk away. I'm done with that problem.
Okay, so if I were Belichick, I wouldn't coach this team next year. He's got the team, including the leader of the team, Tom Brady, now gave the green light for the whole team to mutiny on him. How could he come back and coach that crew? All right, and now what? Does everything have to go through Brady, Tony? I'm sorry. Tom? Is he running the team? Is Tom now the guy that everything has to go through? Good luck with Josh McDaniels. Hey, Murray, you happy with Josh McDaniels next year?
Nah.
Okay. Are you?
Not really.
Okay, then don't bitch about Belichick. Okay?
Danny, who's bitching about Belichick?
What?
Wait a minute. Danny,
all you've done is trash the guy since the end of the game.
Okay, but I never said they should fire him.
Yeah, me either. For the game
you
is what I'm trashing him
next
for.
Year? You want him coaching the team?
Yes!
From now on, all right. From now, I mean, they never would have got to so many championships or been in the mix every year if his system wasn't the way it was. That's the way it was.
Who's disputing that? Nobody's disputing that, Danny. I never said fire the guy, but he screwed up in the Super Bowl. Can we agree on that?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's more than fair to be angry with the way that he handled the Malcolm Butler situation in that game on Sunday.
And so, look, do I want to see him walk? Of course not. Don't think that I revel in it as much as you think I do, because I don't. I don't want to see Belichick walk. But I'm telling you that I think at this point, it feels like it's in play, however small a percentage it might be. And if he doesn't walk now, he walks at the end of next year. So what are you supposed to do, ignore that?
Here's Ben in the car on the Celtics. Hi, Ben.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Couple of quick points here. First off is I really think we should have moved smart at the trade deadline. It's cracking me up how much of a diva IT is being. And finally, I think you guys undervalue coaching in the NBA. I think there's about three or four guys at the top and three or four guys at the bottom. And Ty Lue is really making a case for why the Cavs just have no chance, no matter what roster they have. They don't have a coach to run the organization.
So I think coaching hurts the Cavs. Is it the difference because they won the championship a couple years ago with the same coach?
Well, see, the other thing I would say that coaching LeBron's impossible.
So that's a tough one. I would agree. Now, LeBron really, it's like, this is where it's like, I think a guy like, you know, what's his face? Phil Jackson is overrated, except he might, you know, that's the kind of guy that needs to coach LeBron. Someone who's bigger than LeBron or thinks he's bigger than LeBron or whatever. Zen Master, like Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, maybe Popovich. Anyone else, they're toast.
No, you're screwed.
They're toast.
I mean,
I don't even know if Brad Stevens could do it.
No, he can't because he doesn't have the credentials. Not yet. Even Riley, what did LeBron do to him? Ultimately left him holding the bag. So he bailed on him. LeBron leverages everybody with his talent. And you know, and look, he's a smart businessman. I'm not taking that part away from him. But even Riley ultimately had to throw up his hands because he couldn't harness him.
So again, caller, Brad Stevens is a great coach, and coaching matters on some level. But just, again, I hate to... Tyronn Lue was a coach on the other side in the Eastern Finals last year, and you had Brad Stevens. And how did that work out? Did coaching matter one lick? One lick at all. They thumped you. And it didn't matter who the coaches were. So unfortunately, that's sort of the deal in that league. Unfortunately. Long commercial-free segment is next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Felger and Mass.
I'm a hypocrite.
Wow.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Smith in motion left against the man coverage. Foles drops back, settles in the pocket. He lost one to the end zone left for Jeffrey. He leaps and he makes the catch in the back of the end zone for a touchdown, Philadelphia.
You're going to have to get Rowe out of this game.
Need to get Rowe out of this game.
I mean, that was about the point where they took him off of Jeffrey, right?
That was it was the second quarter.
And they moved Gilmore over there.
Need to get Rowe out of this game. Bill never did. It's painful. I haven't watched, and I don't think we're going to play. I mean, we don't need to torture you. The sound effects stuff, like the game sounds, like, you know, when you win, you take a bath in those and take off your pants to it. When you lose, I don't think you want to hear it. I haven't heard any of it. Is it any good?
No. Well, so the only thing I sent you some of the quotes I saw this morning. The only thing I find it interesting is the insight it gives you into how the Eagles looked at the Patriots. Like, and again, I've only heard little snippets of it. Like, I was watching the whole Philly special goal line play with Foles, and you know, but
that's the only one I watched.
Yeah. So some of the comments though about how they looked at the Patriots secondary and how they were willing to match up and beat the Patriots secondary to me is revealing.
So there's also some of that written. In Sports Illustrated, Andy Benoit wrote sort of like the retrospective on the game, getting some inside looks at the Philadelphia Eagles and what they were saying. Were you going to say something, Murray?
No.
The headline is How Malcolm Butler's Benching Gave the Eagles the Upper Hand. That's the headline. How Malcolm Butler's Benching Gave the Eagles the Upper Hand. Said one Eagles offensive assistant after the game, quote, "We knew they had problems when you force them to defend stacks and bunches. You look at early in the year against those stacks, they were losing guys. What the Eagles saw, particularly in the Carolina game early in the year, was that the Patriots couldn't figure out how to defend receivers who released together on intersected routes, especially when pre-snap motion was involved. New England righted things in week 5 and moving forward by simplifying into more basic man-to-man principles, and that simplification is what Philadelphia exploited on Sunday night. The Eagles consistently created favorable angles and leverage for their receivers. And at times, they even dictated favorable matchups. They got some significant help there from the Patriots, who shockingly benched starting corner Malcolm Butler. Asked when they realized Butler would not be playing, the Eagles assistant said, quote, after the first series or two, we were like, this guy's not in the game. They have 23, meaning Patrick Chung, in there. That's crazy. Exclamation point, end quote. Again, Eagles offensive assistant says that after the first series or two, we realize he's not in the game. They have Chung in there. That's crazy. Benoit writes that Butler's absence was huge. Not only was Chung a safety, now essentially the number three corner, caught in a tough slot matchup against the shiftier Nelson Agholor, but the usual slot corner, Eric Rowe, was isolated on the outside. Downgrades resonated at two positions. The plan was to go after 25, said the assistant. We could get Alshon out there against him. We had Rowe on our team here in Philly. We knew that was a mismatch.
I love that line.
So that's what I, when again, I'm in the stand, so I don't have the benefit of Zoe's call or the Collinsworth or anyone really mentioning, and I'm not on freaking Twitter. So, like, I didn't know, just again, just watching in real time from the stands, that Butler was out of the game, but my initial thought was, like, good job by Peterson going after Rowe. Like, boy, he's really going after Rowe. And then it slowly, at the third, it occurred to me, well, he's going at Rowe because that's who's out there. Like, holy smokes! And it never changed.
And that is the really, that's the worst part of the whole thing, again. Because I can live with the disciplinary part of it. A quarter, a half.
Does that clip go on? Does Zoe say anything after they got to get Rowe out of there? I know that's probably all that's in there, Jimmy. I'm curious if he went on the broadcast on that.
I mean, really, it was, you know, to me, it was unbelievable. I thought the way they were going to line the thing up from the beginning was Gilmore was going to get Jeffrey, Butler was probably going to get Agholor, and that would leave, you know, someone else, probably Rowe, to get Torrey Smith. Torrey Smith doesn't scare me all that much, because that's what he is. He's a third guy. And I felt like that was the way they were going to match up. And not only did they not do that, because, again, Rowe was on Jeffrey to start the game and Gilmore wasn't. Gilmore was on Smith.
So this
talk
is,
about a waste.
This is what the assistant says. It was interesting. We thought 24, Stephon Gilmore, would shadow Jeffrey, which he did in the second half, but not the first, which is so true. Like, what?
No, they changed later after Jeffrey had already burned them. Jeffrey caught the first third down of the game, if I remember right. Right? He was the in-cut and then out, and he beat Rowe badly.
Yeah.
And then he beat Rowe on the touchdown. On the first down, that was a first down play, but he beat him down the field. And look, you can say the coverage there wasn't horrible, but Jeffrey jumped over him and made the play. So, like, you know, the bottom line is Rowe got beat. I just think the whole thing in the secondary got botched all the way around. Again, wrong matchups even with Butler out, and then they never put Butler back in. Huge mistakes. Huge.
And I do think there was a whole intangible component, too, that sort of threw the team for a loop. That they learned of it late. They never adjusted. The optics of Butler standing there crying on the sideline, Bademosi coming in, Butler standing there, and like I think it affected the team from a emotional standpoint.
Sure.
From some sort of intangible standpoint. I think there was a rub off there too. We continue with your thoughts, Joe and Lemonster. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, hi guys. Hello?
Yes, Joe, we're here. What do you got?
All right. Hey, putting all three of them together as far as Jimmy G, Butler, and McDaniels, there is a line there in between all three. As you know, Belichick has an ego problem. And when he was forced to trade Jimmy G, that kind of upset him to a point of no return. And I think at that stage, I don't want to say he was diabolical, but he started figuring out what he could do to regain control of his team.
So this is Joe. Thank you for the call. I'm just going to stop you there because this is Murray's psychological analysis of the thing, is that Bill lost some face with the Garoppolo thing, and the Butler thing was a way for him to sort of get back his
power,
his dominance. I make the decisions. I determine who we play, who we don't play, who I bury, who we promote. I don't need this player to win, and I'll show you. He's going to sit there, and we're still going to win.
Am I in charge of football operations, or am I not? No one is bigger than the team. That's part of the Bill Belichick ethos. It always has been. And over this year, really the last 3 years, and the way I look at it, it's kind of eroded when it comes to he and the quarterback, and now this cornerback, who I made 3 years ago on this stage. You think you're going to act out? Not on my watch. You sit.
See, and I look, if you're looking for consistencies, I think he felt the same way with Welker. I plucked you out of Miami. I gave you Tom Brady. I made you. Like, I think he, you know, there's an element of that in Belichick. There's no question about it. The system's bigger than the players. And so it just, you know, given his history, you can't eliminate that. You just can't.
The other big news today is that Isaiah Thomas was traded from the Cavaliers to the Lakers. Go ahead, Murray. Just do it again real quick.
At least I got this. Because I have to keep, you know, anytime you talk about this game, I get more mad. I think I'm going to get over it, and I get more mad because I have to think about 37 being on the MFN field in the Super Bowl. But then I get this, and it makes me feel better.
Here's Roy and Lawrence on Isaiah Thomas being traded to the Lakers. Hi, Roy.
Hey, how's it going? I'm totally with Murray on this one. Isaiah's pain is my joy today because I liked him when he was on the Celtics. I thought he should have gotten something comparable to the Kyle Lowry deal, 100 for 3. And then he tried to leverage the media to get a max contract, that he was a max contract, and then he gets traded. He then has the Bleeding Heart Players Tribune article. He has the Book of Isaiah thing. Like, he just cried and cried. And now, you know what? He got what he deserved.
What a fall. Sorry, Roy, your phone was going to crap out.
Back up the trash truck.
What a fall. I mean, seriously, from a guy who was being chanted MVP, thought he was the cat's ass, to being traded twice and maybe being bought out from the Lakers, if you believe Jimmy Stewart.
I mean, talk about getting porked on every level possible. And then, upon returning to Boston, he tells them not to play the video, catch me on the next time around. Play the video the next time I come through, and they trade his ass to the Lakers. Oh.
Like, who could have seen that coming?
Like, well, you had wow.
You had the Clippers, Jimmy, to be fair.
I mean, he got walloped on all sides. I mean, talk about getting absolutely porked.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.